Ron and Anian.
You know, we all age. Our bodies get a little tired, a little worn out just by time, and so does the car. So it's really, you've got to consider time and or mileage.
Baby, we were born to run.
The Car Doctor.
You know, when the truck goes into a no-start condition, put the bulb in it. If the bulb is lit and you've got zero fuel pressure, yeah, then you've got a bad fuel pump.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
When is an estimate not an estimate? When it doesn't really tell you anything. Had a customer call up the shop this week, and I think you've all been in that situation. You've been down this road. You're looking for a repair shop. You're looking for a way to, you know, how much is this going to cost? How much is that going to cost? And the mistake is you're putting emphasis on how much, not how right, and, you know, judging the overall effect of the shop. How good of a shop is this? And it's hard. You know, I always think that you've got to give that shop a chance to do an oil change. You got to let them do something small, air in the tires, an oil change, a basic service of some kind. Because when you walk in and say, hey, I need a water pump, even a water pump today, in some cases, it can be open heart surgery. It can be major stuff or on the borderline. There's a lot of procedure. There's a lot of potential for things that can go wrong. An 08 Lexus IS250. Is a neat little car. Speedometer goes up to 165. I don't know if the car will go that fast, but that's what the speedo says. You know, it's got a real strong motor in it. The motor's laid out front to back. It is an all-wheel drive version. They didn't make a lot of them, or at least I can tell you that, judging by what I haven't seen a lot of them. They don't seem to roll through the shop as much as some of the other Lexuses and Toyotas of that generation. But they're out there. And, you know, there's some peculiarities about them. There's some odd things about them, we'll say it like that, that, you know, makes you scratch your head and you say, gee, how do you get to this and how do you get to that? And the water pump's one of them. To get to the water pump, you have to take off the thermostat neck, the serpentine belt, the two idler pulleys, one's tensioner, one's idler, and the upper packaging that goes around the radiator, the plastic shielding and so on. And it seems like they vary with model by what projected time is going to be to do this particular job. So the customer called up, new guy, I never saw or heard from him before, and he's just asking for numbers. And, you know, I go off of an estimator guide. I plugged it into the computer, and the computer said it's a 5.5 hour repair plus parts plus some coolant. I said, Basil, it's, you know, it's $1,200 to $1,400. And there was dead silence as I started the conversation with him. And he said, you know, everybody else is 6 to 8. And I said, then, well, my first reaction was, you're in the wrong shop then, because if they can do it for 6 and I'm getting a reading of 8, I said, but I could tell you more if I saw the car. And I'm not trying to trap somebody to get them come in, but I can tell you more after I look at it. And I started to read the procedure after he hung up. I said, well, we're never going to get that job. And, you know, what's involved? Why is this 5.5 hours? Because even at 5.5 hours, it sounded like a lot of time. Step 4 in the procedure is remove air conditioning compressor. And I'm thinking, why do I have to take the air conditioning compressor off to do a water pump? And it's got to be wrong. It's got to be wrong information, wrong car. I went down and I did it again. I had taken the plate, so I had the VIN. I plugged in the VIN. I got VIN-specific service information for doing a water pump on an 08 IS250 Lexus. And it said, fourth step, discharge refrigerant, remove AC compressor. Huh. Okay. I went to a different information provider. Same thing. I went to the Toyota website. I logged in. I have a subscription. Takes a little bit more time. I looked at Toyota factory service information. Fourth step, remove AC compressor. So the fault actually comes from the manufacturer. Toyota actually calls for it to be done. It's, and it would make sense, right? That's where the service information is being pulled from, right from the manufacturer. And I said, gee, I can't imagine why you'd have to pull the AC compressor to do this water pump. I got to find out. The next day, the car just showed up out of the blue. I came in the next morning, and there's the car sitting out front with the keys and a note, water pump, Basil. Oh, okay, with a phone number. All right. I called him up. He says, yeah, listen, he says, I decided I want you to do the water pump. And I said, but why? I was starting to question it myself. I said, I'm the most expensive. I said, I'm double some of the other guys. He said, yeah, but it sounds like you know what you're doing. He says, I trust your double versus them over what's going to actually happen here, because he said there's just something about the way you explain things. I said, I got that. So I started to go through it. I ordered a water pump. I got one out of Lexus. I wouldn't play with anything. I wouldn't play with anything else, right? And I went ahead and I did the job. Took 4 hours, and I didn't have to touch the AC compressor. And the final bill reflected that there was a problem with two bolts that didn't want to come out of the aluminum. They're steel bolts in an aluminum housing, and they were frozen. And I had to work them back and forth a little bit and soak them, and get them to come loose and free. Thank God for PB Blaster. That stuff worked great. As a matter of fact, I have to comment here. Has anybody seen the new PB Blaster with the straw on top, the smart straw? Holy cow, that is the coolest thing. And they've got a little lever in the back that lets you adjust flow and but I took it, I put a couple of shots on the bolt. I cranked it this way, cranked it that way, and I let the PB soak in. And, within 8 minutes, I sat down, I had a cup of tea, waited for it to drain out, and bolts came out. So it worked really well. It really made the job easier. And then I cleaned everything up and put it back together. But, there was some complication there. Bolts, steel and aluminum don't get along. And when it was done, I gave him a bill and I said, listen, I know you were expecting $1,200 to $1,400. I said, how's 840 sound? And he was shocked. He said, why so? And I explained the whole thing to him. And I also told him, I said, listen, as I educated him, I try to educate you, and as we try to, exchange these ideas, you and I, as we get together every weekend here, I said, every job's just a little different. They're not, they're like snowflakes. They can all be white and cold and they melt at the touch, but there's just something different about every job. Not every job seems to go the same. And the newer the car gets, the more complicated it gets, and the more technology seems to overshadow everything. So in the end, Basil got his car back, and he was happy. I was happy. And I thought about it, and I said, in the future, what would I do? Would I write an estimate again? I don't think it's an estimate. I think it's a guesstimate. I think it's an educated guess, because until you see the car, until you actually go through it, this is not the first time I've had factory service information not tell me proper procedure. And when you don't see a lot of these cars, it's probably the fourth or fifth one I've seen in as many years, because there aren't that many of them out there, that you have to see the repair before you can comment. And I think that's key. And I think what your takeaway is, and what Basil's takeaway was, judge the shop by how they handle the situation, not that they're competitive necessarily on price, that they do the right thing. Listen, we do the right thing. We try to always do the right thing. I do the right thing as a human being, never mind it just in the repair shop. That's what part of life is, right? But, and I get it. I know it's hard to find. But just, they're out there. There are shops out there that are doing the right thing. Don't judge them solely on price. Ask them, what kind of parts are you using? What brand? What's the warranty? And have you done this job before? And see what sort of answers you get. Price should be third or fourth on the list. It's not how much. It's always how right. And that's where I'll leave it. Hey, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. That phone number's for you there. It's there 24-7. You can call in anytime, day or night. Leave a message. When we return, we're going to pull over and take a pause. We're going to talk to Roman in New Jersey about his 01 Acura TL. So stay tuned. I'll be back right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
I should point out, too, that the folks at PB Blaster really have been hard at work. Do you know they're producing more than 22,000 bottles of hand sanitizer, and they're earmarking them for donation to help to help battle against the coronavirus. So we salute them for that. Well, and between the Pro Straw with their control flaw technology disc on the back or knob on the back and making hand sanitizer, they're really stepping up to the plate. So we thank them. Let's get over to Roman in New Jersey, 01 Acura TL, and some radio issues. Roman, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yes, I have a problem with the Acura with AM and FM, basically with the antenna reception.
Okay.
And I'm just hoping that maybe you came across something like this, because it about 10% of the time AM and FM works. Otherwise, I have no reception. And I kind of noticed that I have the car for maybe 3 years, that when it's raining outside or right now it's working, it's drizzling.
Right.
Almost, I don't know, humidity high. And I checked the connections, which I found stuff online, and in the trunk, like where the speakers are underneath the rear speakers, there's an antenna connection. I cleaned that. I checked that. That seems clean. That I can't figure it
okay.
out. How could it work sometimes? And
so here, hear me out. So is this the factory radio? First question.
Yes, it's a Bose Acura factory radio.
Okay.
Great sound system.
And
but
is the antenna in the rear window?
Yes.
Okay. So you'll have to spend a little bit of money. What I want you to do, Al, is just go down to your local auto parts store. Just buy an old school radio antenna, you know, with the old banana clip style on
yes.
the end. Okay. And, you know, just something that would plug into a radio. And then what you can do is take that clip, take that end, and with an alligator wire, and just tap into that connector where the back window connection is. All right.
Okay.
And just, you know, take that antenna, you know, do this outside, do it on a nice day, whatever. Does the radio work? Does it get reception now? Or drive around, find a spot where it doesn't get reception, and then set up your antenna, you know, out in the park somewhere. You'll look like you're trying to contact the planets. but, you know, the idea is that auxiliary antenna will tap in and possibly provide signal. If it doesn't and there's no change, then the next step would be either you or your mechanic has to pop the radio out, find the antenna connection, and plug that antenna that you bought into the back of the radio and see if it gets reception then. If it doesn't, it's a radio problem. If it does, where didn't it get reception? Did it get reception only from the back of the radio, or did it get reception when you bypass the window antenna? If you bypass the window antenna, the fault is somewhere between the window antenna, or I'm sorry, the fault's the antenna. If it doesn't work from the window antenna to the radio, but it works at the radio, then it's somewhere between the radio and the antenna. You see what I'm saying? We're trying to narrow down where's the fault.
So you, in other words, a broken wire. So antenna wire is what? It's two wires, or how does that
well,
work?
It's an antenna wire is coax. It's going to be that wire that you see at the back window. Eventually, somewhere in the body of the interior changes to, you know, old school round coax antenna wire. If you've ever seen an antenna wire for an old school
yes,
antenna,
yes.
Right? It'll change to that. They actually change it from that flat wire that comes up to the back window out to coax wire. But rather than take the whole interior apart, you know, what could an old school antenna cost? $20, $25. They're not a lot of money. And it just becomes a diagnostic tool at that point. You're just using that as the go-between. I have seen a lot of problems with those back windows where the back window antenna itself is at fault. And that's why I want you to do this, you know, step by step before we just start randomly replacing things. Does that make sense the way I'm explaining
it?
It's
the back window.
Say again?
If it's the back window, then what do I do? Basically install a regular antenna on the car?
Well, you can try that. I don't know where you would put that. But at that point, I would probably go talk to... Well, I would do two things. I'd get a current price for that back window antenna. I haven't done one in a long, long time. But I remember them. The last one I saw was, I don't know, $1,500. And that's probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago. They were really crazy, stupid money. At that point, I would probably go to see a radio install shop and say, hey, I need a radio for my Acura with an old school antenna. What would it cost? you know, if it's $600-700 to do that versus whatever it is to change the back window, you know, it's a matter of economics at this point. It's an older car. You're probably just looking for sound.
Yes, yes. Well, I was able to buy a gizmo on the internet, plug something in the back of the radio, and now on CD4, I'm able to have auxiliary outlet with Bluetooth and everything. But I still like to hear AM and FM
instead of just my
phone.
So it sounds like it's the antenna in the back window from what you're telling me, but doing it that way, using the alligator clip, the wire, and the cable lead, that will help you narrow it down as to just exactly
where
it's coming from. You're very welcome, Roman. You have a good rest of the day. David in Iowa, Mercedes
S2. Hey, how are you, Ron?
Good, sir. What's going on? Now what are you working on?
Oh, well, I've got a friend. Actually, we had a foot snow here the other day, yesterday.
Yeah.
So... and we weren't doing a lot of work. We couldn't even get outside. It looked like a blizzard. I thought I had died and gone to South Pole or something.
Yeah, really? That
but,
bad? Yeah.
Anyway,
we had no snow here this year.
A friend of mine has got a S2, I think is what he said, 1967 Bentley, okay? And it's the same thing as a Rolls Royce if you put the Rolls Royce grill on it. So it's the exact same car.
Okay.
Anyway, he picked it up for $2,500. And he was thinking about putting a motor in it. Is there anybody that you have to mail off to get a motor, or you have to get with home the Bentley? I don't even know if they're still in business over in.
Well, they're there, but you're talking about something that, you know, this is basically the equivalent of something hand built and very specific. So I would make sure, you know, this isn't something you're going down to the local machine shop. Unless they've seen and done these before, which I don't think you're going to find in Iowa, you know, I would definitely have him do the research, you know, identify the exact vehicle. And I would try and get out. I would use the power of the internet thinking about it. I would find, because even if somebody works on current model Bentley, Rolls Royce, whatever it is that we want to consider this to be, this is an older vehicle. This is a 67. It's 50 years. Or somewhere's thereabout. We want to, you know, find somebody that does a restoration and has the ability to source older parts. So I would use the power of the internet. There's got to be an older Bentley Rolls-Royce forum group out there that will see this for what it is and then help do the restoration and could guide him accordingly. But, David, I've got to think he's going to have deep pockets, you know, that this is not going to be something inexpensive. So, you know, just advise him that he's got to know what he's getting himself into. You know, does he?
Well, I did all the body work, Ron, and we painted silver wings. They call them wings, you know,
right.
The fenders.
Right.
But
right.
I painted it silver, and then we put a beautiful green on it. And I didn't realize that the trunk is aluminum. But,
yeah. And there's a lot of neat little peculiarities about that car, David. But like I said, have him verify exact cost before he jumps any further. I appreciate the call. You have a good rest of the day. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, we're back right after this. Welcome back, Ron. You know, every once in a while, your mind slips. I guess that's a sign of getting older, right?
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while. There he is. How are you, Tom?
Good. How about you?
No, not bad. You know, it's funny. I was thinking of you because I'm sitting here reading an email. Tom from Newburgh, New York, wrote in with some questions about PB Blaster, and I said, I have to tell Tom this story because that's Tom's hometown.
Yeah. You know what? That's not me because I do use PB Blaster. Good stuff.
Right. Oh, it's great stuff, and this Tom doesn't know about it, and I was getting confused where I was. I'm thinking, I have to tell Tom when I see him at the shop this week, and I'm ready to go Ron at RA Automotive, and I went, wait a minute, that's not where I
love it.
Oh, my Lord. So anyway, Tom from Newburgh, New York writes in with some questions about, hey, Ron, I hear you talking about PB Blaster. Is that the same PB Blaster that I've been using since the 60s? Tom, Newburgh, New York. Yeah, Tom, it is. As a matter of fact, they've actually modified PB Blaster. They've, if you can believe, they've improved on it, and I don't know that it's necessarily improved upon the formula, although I'm sure they've kept up with it. But the new thing that PB Blaster has now is they have something called a Pro Straw, and they with control flow technology, and you know it's neat. The straw flips up. And it's right on the can, so no more of trying to get the little straw into the hole on the end of the nozzle that you end up losing. And the control flow technology on the back, you can, how much lubricant or how much penetrant do you want to come out of the can, you can actually control the flow by moving the little dial, the knob in the back of it. It's phenomenal. I've been using it all week in the shop, and just good stuff, good stuff. But yeah, that's the PB Blaster stuff we're talking about. And for the listeners, you can find more information at blastercorp.com and look it up. And that's the same PB Blaster that's bringing out hand sanitizer to the local first responders in the across Northeast Ohio. They're producing up to 22,000 bottles. I'm reading the press release. More than 22,000 bottles of sanitizer marked for donation. Makers of Blaster Corporation, makers of the penetrant PB Blaster, announced recently is donating cases of hand sanitizer to dozens of local police and fire departments. The company's stepping up along with Label Aid out of Huron, Ohio, and Jamestown Container in Macedonia, Ohio. They're all getting together and they're helping the cause. So good job. Let's get over to Steve in Wisconsin, 2000 Olds. And some erratic fuel reading. Steve, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I've replaced, I guess to start with, I'm getting erratic fuel readings, on the gauge. And generally, when it gets down to about a half a tank, it starts jumping around all over the place.
Okay.
And I replaced the fuel pump probably 3-4 years ago, and it seems to be doing the same thing again now.
All right. So any diagnosis up to this point? Has anybody tried anything?
Well, no. Okay. I was checking online at fuel pumps, thinking that's probably just a sender again, and kinds of things.
It could be. But yeah, listen, let's try and do a little diagnosis, all right? So
okay.
So if I had my way and I had my choice, all right, first thing I would do is I'd plug a scan tool in. I would go into and look at data stream. Now this is a 2000, this is an older car. Depending upon what software had developed at that point, and sometimes you just don't know till you get there. You can go and look at the scan tool and see what the fuel tank readings are, all right? If the fuel tank readings match the sender and we could catch the fuel tank readings at the computer and we see them as erratic as the gauge, then I've got to believe the problem is somewhere between the sender itself or the wiring leading up to the computer in the instrument cluster. In other words, if I'm reading erratically in two places, I can't believe the computer's interpreting it wrong and the sender's interpreting it wrong. I'm sorry, that the gauge itself isn't, I can't have a bad computer and a bad gauge is what I'm trying to say. It's got to be the source. All right?
Okay.
If I disconnect the wire going to the sender, which in this case will be unplugging it, it's probably a four-way. It's probably a four-wire connector. And just putting a potentiometer, a variable resistor, on the sender lead and just sweep the circuit high-low. It should be a 0 to 90 ohm resistor. If it shows, full at one end, low at the other, and midpoint it stays rock steady, I got to think my wiring is okay. And then, yes, then I would agree it's time to drop the tank, lower the tank, I should say. We don't drop anything. And at least take the pump out. And with the pump in hand, key on, hook the pump up, and just gently sweep the sender and watch the gauge, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Or sweep the sender with an ohm meter attached to it and see, does it have any dead spots in it? So
sure.
Now, when you purchased that fuel pump and sender, was it a GM piece? Was it an aftermarket piece?
Aftermarket. I believe it was Carter, I believe.
Right. So some of the aftermarket stuff, you know, unfortunately, some of the stuff just doesn't hold up as well as it should. The other thing that I have seen as a common cause of fuel pump sender, or I should say fuel sender issues, is depends on the brand of fuel you're using. Sometimes there are deposits that form on the printed circuit board or on the wiring of the sending unit, and they'll cause issues like you're describing, too.
Okay. Yeah, I don't drive the car a lot.
Right. GM actually had a bulletin, it's probably 6 or 7, probably 8 years old now, where they talked about certain fuels have a higher sulfur concentration within them, and they caused sulfur deposits on the tracking arm of or the tracking contact point of the sending unit, and it would cause erratic fuel gauge readings. And that's
sure.
and that's one of the reasons why, you know, when people say to me, hey, why should I bother using a fuel tank cleaner? And I'm not saying this works every time, and I'm not saying go out there, pour it in your tank, Steve, and it's going to all of a sudden make your gauge work perfect. But using products like Berryman with Hess technology that keeps fuel systems clean, that's one of the reasons, because it helps defeat deposits in the tank and in the engine, and it helps clean up things like that and prevents them from building up. So just something for the future. But those are the steps. That's what you kind of got to go through, and that's the deal. All right, sir?
Okay. Yeah, well, appreciate your help. I'll give that a try.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
Okay.
You take good care. Yes, sir. All righty. Bye-bye. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Car Doctor, welcome back. Let's get over to Bain. Is that Bain in Maine? No pun intended. 07 Chrysler 300. Bain, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Well, I've got a 300C in Chrysler in 07, and it will not come out of pack. So I took the top off the unit there so I could look down inside, because somebody told me there's a little lever, and I pushed that little lever over, and it does the same thing that it does when you push on the brake. You push on the brake, it lets me move the lever to the right, but it still won't come back. So then I lean way over and look down on the passenger side on the front of the unit, and there's another little pink lever there, and I move that with a screwdriver, and I can get it out of pack, and but every time I put it back in pack,
it's
I have
locked.
To reach down around there with a screwdriver and move that again.
Right.
Now I've started taking it out, and I've got it almost out, but I can't quite get it out.
Okay. Well, before you do that, what do you do for a living, Bain?
What do I do? I'm retired. I used to dig holes and fill them in.
Okay. So I get it. You want to take it out because you're going on the assumption it's bad, right?
Well, I have to move that thing I have to reach down in on the front of that and push it with whatever I can get in, a screwdriver or something, and then I can take it out of pack.
Right, but
and I can move it.
But you're trying to take the shifter assembly out of the car.
Well, I am now because it's evidently that piece is broke.
Right. Well, is it broke or it's just not moving? Do you see physical damage?
Well, on the front of it, on the driver's side, there's another unit, not the shifting cable, but there's another little unit.
Right.
And I don't know exactly what that is, but there's a little small cable that comes from that and goes back into this unit. Well, I moved that a little bit because I could see it move a little bit, and that cable fell out, so I've got to get it out to put that back in. But I still think that unit acts like it's broke in there, because you look down in there and you can see a little, looks like there's a nub broke off it.
Okay. If there's physical damage, what I'm trying to get at is, all right, that shifter assembly is part of, and it communicates with the onboard computer for shift position. So in a perfect world, if we had a scan tool, we'd hook up and we'd be able to see park, reverse, drive, neutral, low, etc. As we shift the shifter, the scan tool would tell us what position the shifter is in. That shifter assembly reports to and through at least two other modules, the FICUM, the front control module, and the IPM, the integrated power module, where its position is, so it can then, you know, tell the PCM, so it knows what gear to put the trans in. So, you know, there's a lot of there's more here than just simple cables and wires. All right, if you see physical damage, that's one thing. But if you don't, I would encourage you to get it into drive, get it to your mechanic, and let them start by at least looking for fault codes. This could be a communication fault, all right, where one computer can't talk to another computer, and as a result, when you step on the brake and try to shift the shifter, it doesn't see your foot, or it doesn't see you apply force to the release button on the shifter, right? I think there's a release button you have to squeeze to pull to move the shift lever, right?
No, you just have to push the brake down, and then you can move the lever. But it moves to the right, but it will not come back.
Is this a bucket seat car or a bench seat car? This is a bucket seat car.
Bucket.
Okay, right. So you know, there's some communication that has to go along here. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're already past the point of no return.
Well, yeah, because the little cable come unhooked.
Right.
You can't even see it.
Right. So, you know, you're going to have to take that apart. I would ask you to be careful and be mindful, but, you know, you may be digging the hole a little deeper here. No.
It kind of looks that way.
Yeah. Well, listen, you spent a career digging holes. At least you know what you're getting yourself into. You ever dig yourself a hole you couldn't get out of?
Yeah.
Well, you might be doing it again, brother. So, you know, I would definitely be taking some pictures with my cell phone. So if you have to get back to a point, you know, at the very least, you know, at least you have a reference to look back upon. But there's not much more I can tell you, because at this stage, you've already passed the first two ports or three points of diagnosis. Scan it, check for voltage on pins 1 and 2, and do you have any bias voltage on 5 and 6? But I think you're sort of past that point. So my only thing I can do is wish you the best of luck.
All right, so you suggest I have somebody put it on, like attach a computer to it and see if they can figure out what's wrong.
As long as you have not electrically disconnected anything,
no.
Then yeah, that would be where I would go with this. You ever look at a computer network?
I don't know anything at all about computers.
Okay, well, a computer network, you've heard the term, right? You ever go to the supermarket and look at all the cash registers?
Yeah.
And think that there's a computer in every one of those? All right? That's a computer network. There's a register on lane 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. If in a car, in your particular car, if lane 1 is the shifter and lane 2 is the front control module and lane 3 is the integrated power module and lane 4 is the engine controller, if lane 3 stops talking, if lane 3 breaks, the other three remaining modules may not work. And that's the problem. That's what I'm trying to explain. This could have a communication fault as a result of a problem somewhere else that will make it look like lane 1 is broken, but it's really lane 3. And that's what a scan tool will do. It will at least tell you, are there any communication faults? Are there any other codes in the system? And then doing some voltage checks to see, is the system capable of responding? Yes. And then go look at the shifter. Shifters are not uncommon, but I'd sure like to know before you take the rest of the car apart and dig the hole any deeper. Good luck to you, Bain. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, we're back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. So where are we? We're about 4 or 5 weeks, maybe 6 weeks in quarantine now, right? And if you haven't been driving your car, here's something I want you to think about. The fact that you haven't been driving it, the fuel that's in there is, you know, up to a month or a little older in terms of time, right? It's been sitting there a while. So, you know, you've got to think about, you got to drive the car a little bit. It's really important. And the Car Care Council thinks you need to drive the car a little bit too. They've made a list, and some of the things they've got written down, and I want to pass them on to you because I couldn't agree with them more. And this comes to us care of Rich White, the executive director of the Car Care Council. Batteries. You've got to remember, your car's got a lot of batteries on it. They're always in operations. If it sits too long, the battery could die within a couple of weeks. So don't be surprised if you go out there in an emergency and you need it to go, it doesn't go. So run the car. Tires. Tires get flat spots. Tires are going to lose a little bit of air while driving. So you've got to have some way to add air to the tires, and you've got to have, make sure that you rotate them, move the vehicle. Fuel. Like I said, fuel in the tank can go bad from sitting, and it also can get some condensation issues. So you want to make sure you're using a fuel stabilizer, the stuff from Berryman, berrymanproducts.com. Get out to them. You can read all about that on the web while you're sitting at home. Oil. Oil should be changed by time. I'm not saying it's ready yet, but when was the last time it was due? The brakes can get rusty. Those rotors aren't great if the car's been sitting a long time. Just some things to think about, courtesy of the Car Care Council. I'm Ron Ananey, the Car Doctor, saying thank you for taking the time this hour. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive, they're priceless. See ya.